Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Wednesday nights, and you know what that means. A hard cut by Ryan on the music. It is the Mark Order Podcast. I'd say coming to you as always, but it's been a while, so I'm a little out of practice. It is me, Ryan, joined by my co-host, Asian Joe. How you doing, Joe?
It's been about a year, right? I feel like it's been at least since 2025 since we did a show.
Yeah, it's been a year. At least we've crossed the calendar. I'm going to say it's been a year.
No, I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you, Ryan. Happy New Year to everyone out there. Hope everyone had a good holiday season.
Same. I hope you had a good one. Anything special happen?
Not really. Just kind of finishing moving to the new house, and then that's been kind of my life for the last month. So, other than that, yeah, no complaints. What about you? What happened for you?
Nothing. Followed by nothing. Mixed with a big load of nothing. So nothing. Okay. We got pieces in the chat saying Kate's still running from the grind. Yes, she is. I hear rumors. These are just rumors now. Unconfirmed. We may be getting her back very soon. But they're just rumors. And that is not enough to confirm anything.
She's gonna charge a per appearance fee,
Knowing her, yes, probably a per minute fee. Mm. Yeah, she
charges by the minute. None of my business.
I mean, go by the hour personally, but you know, that's just me. Say it again.
I said, really, you an hour?
Well, I mean, cuddle time. What are we talking about again? Wrestling. We're talking wrestling because there was wrestling tonight, but we're talking about the holidays. And again,
I went to Dynamite last week. That was fun.
I was going to ask you did go to the New Year's Eve Dynamite. How was it?
It was fun. It's even better when it's a minute from my house.
So it was only a minute.
That was a mile. Sorry.
A minute, a mile. Well, maybe if you're really, really fast.
Yeah. But no, it was really fun. Good crowd, good turnout. It was a lot more than I wouldn't question what to expect on New Year's Eve Dynamite. But we had that big win with Willow, so that was a fun surprise.
Then that was a surprise.
So yeah, I almost forgot about that. It seemed like it happened so long ago.
Yeah, I mean that's part of why we weren't around for pretty much all December. We couldn't do one. The one week I plan on doing, some got in the way, and then their shows were on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, which again, not really their fault because that's just how a calendar works out. But those are just two very difficult nights to try to do a show. You know, between family obligations and then you going to the show and me just not going to do it. It's all over the place. Did they do anything special? Like how did they do anything after the show, or did it end right at 10? Or like right as the show ends, I should say.
No, I don't think that. I can't think of anything special, really. It's the usual, you know, Tony Khan speaking.
I can't even do a Tony Khan voice, so I'm not going to try.
No.
Because it gets into like a high-pitched and like almost like a... His voice is breaking. Like he's like a teenager, but... Did they do the collision or anything after? Or I don't remember.
No, I think Collision was live.
I can never remember when it is live and it isn't live. I watch it, but...
It was live. I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it probably was. I just, when you watch it, you don't realize that, like...
Because they didn't tape anything ahead of time. There's no ROH matches, really. Right
yeah. Now, so. Well, which is nice, because, you didn't do it ahead, and you'd hate to do it after on... New Year's Eve, because it's like, okay, the show goes till 10, 10:15. I don't know how what traffic's like getting out of there, if you even needed to deal with traffic since it was a mile from your house. But you get out, you can be out in time to go celebrate the new year.
Or go to bed like I did.
Oh, you didn't see midnight?
I'm too old for that.
I
That's
mean,
a man's game.
so let me put it this way. I saw it, but only because I looked at my clock and it was after midnight. I didn't actually like, I don't watch any of it. I don't care. I just happen to be awake. I'm a night owl for the most part until, well, let me rephrase that. I'm a night owl naturally, but work and life has beaten me to the point where I got to go to bed at a decent hour or I'm very, very tired. So I was up, but that's such a neither here nor there. I'm trying to think, is there anything? Did anything special, anything else happen to you over lay holidays? Just the house?
No, that's it, really. Yeah, that was more than enough. So,
Did Santa come and visit you?
he didn't. And I have a chimney now. I have like a fireplace. And just, yeah. Maybe I didn't open the flue. The when we have to open up,
Oh, you had the flu?
No, I'm saying like
Oh.
the little.
Oh, the flu, not you having flu. I heard it open up the phone, like, well, I only asked that, I guess, was on my head because I know a couple people who have had it. I'm like, yeah. Do you have like a wood burning fireplace?
There's a wind burning one. I've never had a wind burning one.
That's nice. They're let me they're a pain in the ass more than like a gas one. Because gas when you just flip the switch and it lights, but there is something nice about them where you can just
It
immunize you.
really hasn't been cold enough yet here, so.
Really?
No,
There?
I mean, today was 65.
Was warmer there today than it was here, but we're still in the 50s, but Oh, see, like Pieces has a point that cleaning them sucks, which
I
is true.
will gladly pay someone to do for that.
Yeah, well, that's what chimney sweep is for. Big G just cr making sure we know that it's spelled FLOO, not FLU. So I appreciate that, Big G. I'm gonna say hi to Taylor Cannon, who welcomed us a happy new year before the show. Hi, Taylor. Always great to see you here. But yes, it's FLOO if you're trying to spell it. I am not trying to spell it because I couldn't win a spelling bee.
Me either. Came close, but not
Was there any big wrestling news over the
No, I don't. I
vacation?
mean, no, I mean, there's some people aren't with the company anymore. The Jericho thing. That's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, so let's we'll do that real quick since we are an AEW show. Mercedes Martinez, Matt Taven, and Alex Abrahantes are not with the company anymore. For sure. They hadn't been used in so long. That's not a great surprise to anyone. I mean, Taven had a long usage there and then they just kind of stopped. Mercedes Martinez, for whatever reason, never seemed to get it going in AEW or ROH AEW. She's retiring in 2026, so she might just want to do her indie run to like get her go out, which is perfectly fine with me. Everyone, I mean, it's fine with me if she didn't want to be with AEW or WWE. It's her career, but she should have a good indie send off. Abrahantes is a little surprising to me. I'm not saying they need him necessarily for his managerial roles because he did just seem to go out with any luchador they want him to, but he has a lot of experience in and around the business and in and around both the commentating side for Spanish commentating and as a manager. I thought they would keep him on for something. So that was a little, maybe he didn't want it, but that. Just a little surprising to me. He seemed like he had a use outside of what they were using it for.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you said there. I thought Alex, they could have used him more, especially if the more they have gone into the Mexico market. I thought they had more role for him on the business side. But yeah, I think everything else seems to make sense. Taven and the Kingdom thing kind of fell off with, unfortunately, Adam Cole's injury and everything else. They kind of seem kind of lost without that piece. But.
Yeah. So I mean, I listen. I don't. I would. The way I always view it is, I hope those people. It was a decision by those people, less the companies, because I never want to see anyone lose their job. That just sucks. So that sucks. SJ in the chat. Hey, SJ. Glad you're checking out the show live. I know oftentimes you are catching us on later because life is in the way. So I appreciate you checking us out live. The other big, not big news because it hasn't happened yet. Jericho leaving AEW to go to WWE. We've been talking about this for a while, and it was heavily expected and rumored, and it's still heavily expected and rumored because it hasn't happened. There was, for whatever reason, I mean, I know WWE leaned into it a little bit with some of their wording of some phrases, but for whatever reason, people thought he'd show up on Raw on Monday, which never seemed to be the plan. But it does seem like a foregone conclusion that he's going to WWE. And I mean, I'm not saying good, like, oh, get rid of Jericho, because I happen to be a Jericho fan, so it's I like seeing him. And I'm WWE, so it's like it no longer, it's not like it's gonna stop me from seeing him. But he is someone who probably benefit from a big change of scenery. Like, I was hoping, like, if it was AEW, his time off would help because he could come back as something else. But he could probably benefit at this point from going to WWE, and it having not been there for so long, it will feel new and fresh. And he probably won't be used every week and stuff like that. Like, I do think it's probably a better call for him. What do you think now that it seems much more likely that he's going?
Well, yeah, and I feel like he had one more contract left in him as far as his career. And I thought it would make sense for him to kind of end his career in WWE with one final run, right? It seems to be the year of a lot of retirements with, AJ Styles, his career coming to a close. You had Johnson to wrap up. So, like, I think Jericho probably this next one to kind of come to a close here within the next year or two. And then he can go into the Hall of Fame and kind of put the close that chapter.
Yeah, that is true for his for his career. It's probably better he ends it at WWE so he can go into the Hall of Fame easy more easily. I mean, he would have gotten there anyway. WWE, they're I'm gonna say it, and everyone, but like there does seem to be like they're getting closer and closer to scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of Hall of Fame. So they're going to want him as soon as he's possible to go in. Now they have seen it first ballot as soon as they want to put him in. I'm surprised they're not doing it this year. Like it's but they're going to want it. So that is probably a better any form. The interesting thing is going to be what he, and not because I believe anything he says, and it's not even necessarily a knock on him. I wonder what he's going to say once he's in WWE, because he is, for better or worse, somewhat of a mercenary. Like he will, when he's in your company, he will trash the other as much as he just to be like, And I get it. I don't. I like that's who he is. So I'm just kind of curious to see. He was a founder of AEW. So, well, just curious. I'm just. Just speculating on if he has anything to say.
I saw pieces mention the Tanahashi retirement. That's AEW adjacent.
That is actually, yeah, they have their deal with New Japan, which came up as part of Wrestle Kingdom. I forget the one wrestler wasn't a big fan of the deal. Doesn't think and New Japan gets anything out of it. I would disagree only because I think it's a place for New Japan wrestlers to go wrestle in the States when they otherwise don't really get that. They're not, they're not the most well established over here. But anyway, yeah, Tanahashi retired after a very long career. Apparently, he gave himself one heck of a send off considering he runs New Japan. So I didn't watch it, to be honest with you, staying up that late to watch Wrestle Kingdom, because I don't regularly watch New Japan Pro Wrestling, so just doesn't.
I did not. I just watched a lot of the clips and highlights and things of that nature, but it looked like a pretty perfect way to send them off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised you got to see clips, because New Japan is very strict with their copyright. People try to put something online and they pull it almost in. It's to me, their biggest down, the biggest flaw is that they don't like clips of anything up. Meanwhile, AEW and WWE are putting all, like, one it all out there, because it just, the more people that see you and like your stuff, the better you are. But that's differences in personality. So yeah, that's kind of, I mean, we'll have some, well, within a 2 minutes, we'll have some wrestling news of this week. But I don't think there's anything else. Do you?
No, I think that's pretty much it. You hope it's a little bit slower around the holiday season.
Yeah, that's basically So, all right, well, we'll get into Dynamite. There'll be no commercials tonight. It was our first night back. Let us get in a little bit of a groove here. But I do encourage you all to check out The Shining Wizards and The Shining Wizards Network. There's a lot of great shows on there. The Shining Wizards have been doing this forever and a day. They have all these great interviews. They had one this week that they kind of had an interview. The internet or sound was going in and out. But the best interview in all of pro wrestling podcasting, and just a fun show that I encourage everyone to go watch. And then go watch the rest of the Shining Wizards Network. There's a lot of great shows on there. Not all of them about wrestling. There's a metal show. There's a horror show. There's just a whole lot going on. So please check out the Shining Wizards and the Shining Wizards Network. Now, we're going to get into AEW Dynamite from, I forget where they were. Do you remember where they were? Tulsa. I should have known that, but...
Yeah, good old JR.
I was going to say, I should have known that because good old JR was back. Introduced on air, which is unusual. Scott's wondering who threatened me to come back to work. Scott, I'm so far the most consistently lately. I don't know, man. I haven't even hosted with guest hosts. Like, my inconsistency is coming. Don't worry. I will make up for this time. But, you know, we got, and like I said, we got Kate hopefully coming back soon. But they did JR on air, which is unusual. Usually that's done right before the show goes on. You know, if you ever, I'm sure you saw this on Wednesday when you were there, they introduced the announcers right before they go live. So it was kind of nice to give JR his moment. Pieces is making a point. JR doesn't really add anything to commentary anymore. I agree on that. I liked what they were starting to do towards the end before he got sick and couldn't be there, which is, you can't have him for a whole show. One, I don't think he can do a whole show anymore. I think his voice and his attention just isn't there. If you pull him out for either special matches or main events, I do appreciate that, because then it's like a special feel. I think it doesn't always have to be the main event. I think a match, truthfully, like we'll talk about in a minute, like the start of the match with Shelton Benjamin versus John Moxley, which was pretty old school in the way it was wrestled. It was much more concerning the later violence and all. Was much more strict wrestling. He's better for those, because that is much more his flavor. So I like that when it's kind of his flavor match. But you don't need him for a show, a whole show. And I don't think he can do a whole show. I mean, do you disagree at any point?
No, I think you're right. I think having him as an attraction instead makes it feel like a big time match, especially from pay per views and things like that. That makes more sense. Having him do 2.5 hours is not probably the best for him or for the people watching.
JR said on Scott George saying JR said on his podcast he was on a pay-per-view only deal until recently. I hope it goes back to that and not even an entire pay-per-view. Again, he's got value, clearly. But I just feel like he's not what he was, and that's not a bad thing. That's life. Like, that's none of, you know, as you get older, no one is what they were. I mean, that's not, it's nothing new or surprising, and nothing that should be thought too negatively about. But we start off the night not with a match, but with Renee Paquette backstage, informing us that Jetspeed have been viciously attacked and they're not cleared for their trios match tonight, which I was a little annoyed until I saw the replacement, and that got kind of fun. The demand roll up in Ricochet obviously is clearly not worried. He looks like at first you think, oh, did he do it? Was he the bad guy? But then you have Don Callis come out. Well, Ricochet then starts to explain quickly that he paid people to do something to take out Jetspeed. And that's when Don Callis comes out and he introduces Mark Davis. But then, and this is the bit of the news, he introduces Jake Doyle. For those wondering who the heck is Jake Doyle, he was previously known as Jake something in TNA and on the indies. But TNA, if you're watching TV. This is the first of two big pieces of news to come out of this show. Jake Doyle, Jake something is awesome. Jacked beyond belief. I hope they kind of leave him with Mark Davis for a while and give them a big meaty tag team. Because I think that'll be fun. I think they have some of them, but you can always have more because they have some very small tag teams or whatever. I think a big meaty tag team. I do still have questions about the Callis family. It felt like for a little while we were about to pare it down and now it's getting bigger again. I just don't quite understand how this is working. They got to get rid of some of those guys. I'm not going to acknowledge Jesse Ozog. Oh, wait, Kate's not here. Yes, Sam. Hi, Jesse. Sorry. I forgot Kate wasn't here. Oh, yeah, she never is. Jesse with a good point. Davis and Doyle sound like a BBC show. Correct. And Peace is saying Jake something or Jake Doyle is even bigger in person. So what did you think of the signing of Jake Doyle? Jake something.
Oh, first of all, a few things in my head as you were rattling off things about Ricochet paying off people. I immediately thought of, he pays people. He pays people. I think that can be a theme song for him. Jake something, big fan of his, always been fun to watch in TNA. He was in Impact, right?
Yeah, he was, I think he was when it was called Impact too. I think he was there. It's hard because I can never remember the timeline for that.
But he always had the look, had the character, had the work. I thought it was a matter of time for him back into AEW. Jake Doyle sounds like, Doyle rules. So I will take that. And I like that him and Mark Davis look like a tag team. Like you said, they look like bouncers of a 1980s Miami club. Like, big guys, black tank tops, beards. Like, they look like they're about to throw you out of the club. So I'm glad him and Mark Davis can hopefully tag. And I don't know. And then the John Callis family, it is getting too big. This tonight's team felt like a B version of it, maybe. And I wanted to be respectful of it, but like it felt like it wasn't the all-star cast. It was just, you had a few less of the role players, but they got a lift with one returning member.
Yeah. And we're going to have to go talk about that in a second. That's the second big piece of news, but we'll get there. Oh, Scott had a broken foot. I hope your foot is all healed up now, Scott.
A broken foot?
He had a broken left foot, but I think he's all right now. Get it? Left foot, all right. Okay.
I gotcha. Yep.
Did you get me? So yeah, listen, I think Jake Doyle is going to be fine. The one thing that AEW consistently struggles with, and it's, I don't know why, it's they sometimes don't use enough of the talent that they have. And I hope that he's gets used appropriately. You have trios titles, you have tag titles. Use these guys more. Like, yep, and not just titles, divisions. You have these divisions. Use these divisions more. Just my humblest of humble opinion.
Yeah.
Then we go to a match, and it's Jon Moxley versus Shelton Benjamin was this for the title? Yes, it was for the, it was Eliminator. Okay, I missed that part. I think Bobby Lashley's out hurt right now, so you're going to see Shelton be singles for a while. This was, as I described earlier, kind of like a JR match in the sense it was pretty wasn't slow or anything when I say old school. Like old school in the sense that it was in the ring for the most part. It was back and forth moves and chops and forearms and, you know, all the fun stuff that they both can do pretty well. It wasn't a typical, there was one point where they did go outside. I forgot that, but it just didn't feel like that match to me. It felt like a more in the ring stuff. But Moxley won with a folding press. So good for him. And then afterwards he offers a handshake to Benjamin and Benjamin accepts. What do you think of this opener?
This felt like a JR match. It felt like a classic, you know, graps match. And he even called it out talking about the chain wrestling or the catch wrestling of Moxley. And I really enjoyed the back and forth with the catch wrestling between him and Shelton. It was a fun match. I thought with how long it went, I really did think that they really let Benjamin win by time limit draw, since they mentioned the fact that, you know, a time limit draw is a win for the challenger still. So I thought they let him win that way. So other than that, it's interesting to see Moxley, because I thought he was kind of a face, but he still kind of isn't a face, but then he is a face. So I'm trying to figure out what he is. So.
Yeah, well, so we were away, so I guess we'll go into this for a little bit. Moxley clearly has committed to his face turn, which is weird because the rest of the Death Riders are not faces. They're still acting as heelish as ever. So it's weird that he is, I'm not saying it's weird that he's going face, but because that would be how he gets kicked out of the Death Riders. But it seems like he's heavily committed already to that. And it kind of did happen. I mean, I will say this in fairness to AEW, it did kind of happen naturally. The fans got really behind him. From what I gather, it's because he was willing to, you know, he was putting on all these really good Continental Classic matches and they were fairly normal. And he took some losses, which I think for whatever reason, people like that, you know, that the guy doesn't always win. And it just, he humanized himself a bit. I think there is logic to why he's now more face than heel, in the sense of like, he was out to make AEW better. And maybe he feels like that's happened for some reason, like everyone had to elevate their game because of him. Whether that's true or not, I can at least, there's some sick logic there. So I don't know. I don't have an opinion. I don't have a more thoughts beyond. I have an opinion, but I don't have any more insight than that. But I do have a question for you. And it's the same question that Scott George asked in the chat, which is, did you note Shelton was, looked like he was tearing up when he walked out? Fightful tweeted about it. So I did that. That's not an original.
You're not.
And I don't know why. I mean, it could also just, truthfully, could have just been awkwardly placed sweat down the cheek or something like that. Like, you don't know, but it did look like.
Huh.
So hopefully, I'm hoping it was sweat and it's not something worse, because I like Shelton. I don't want bad. So that was that match. So then we have Jungle Man Jack Perry go out, and he was supposed to be in this trios match against The Demand, Bishop Khan, Ricochet, and Toa Leona. And he was supposed to partner up with Jet Speed. Because again, Luchasaurus is out. They've done a sell on a shoulder. I don't know how injured his shoulder actually is and how much of it's a sell. But he didn't have partners anymore. Davis and Doyle, double D's, beat up Jet Speed. Yeah, Jet Speed didn't like the double D's. So who's going to team up with Jack Perry? Awesomely, it was the Young Bucks in their very old school looking gear, very Young Buckian. This then, of course, ended up being a typical, and I don't mean it as an insult when I say this is a typical like AEW trios match. I mean, as a compliment, I think they do really good trios matches. There was a hell of a moment for Toa Leona where he did a three-person Samoan drop and then tossed Jack Perry into the corner, basically one-handed. So it was, he looked really good. But in the end, Jack Perry and the Young Bucks won by pinfall with a running knee from Perry on Ricochet. Makes perfect sense, I think. Yes, I don't love the demand necessarily losing a lot because they're the established group. But then again, Perry was running with the Young Bucks for a while, so there is some chemistry. I don't like when, like, I would have been more mad had Perry and Jet Speed won, because I don't like newly put together things beating the established group. But this is more of they had something. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the match? I mean, I know I called out the Leona part. I don't know if you got anything else. And any thoughts? And then we can get to the afterwards.
No, my note about Toa was, Toa is strong after seeing him basically squat three men into a Samoan drop. Fun match. I like the fact that it was a contrast of that first, the opening match. Like, we talked about how that one was so much in-ring, grappling, catch wrestling, classic wrestling. This was much more fast-paced, high-flying, quicker athleticism. And just kind of, I like the contrast between the two styles of matches. Other than that, yeah, I think it's not, I'd like to see Vince McMahon win more, but if they keep losing and eventually it's because they blame Ricochet, then that's fun. And to your point, I think the fact that they lost to, Elite 2.0 or whatever the Bucks and Jack Perry were for a while, that makes sense. Maybe some of the history. Nothing else. It's just a kind of classic Young Bucks match.
Yep. So after the match, we have Doyle and Davis, Double D's. They hit the ring to beat up the Young Bucks, and the Gates of Agony throw out Perry. Jet Speed, they come down, but you can tell they're not in full health, but they have hockey sticks, so they're going to do that. And then, baby, when the lights go out, the lights went out. And we're going to talk about the lights going out later, my God. But the lights went out. And standing in the ring when they go back on eventually, which did take a while, which should have been an indication of like what was going to come for the main event. When they went back on was Andrade El Idolo in his mask, which, is it Andrade? Of course it is. I mean, no one else wears that mask. He comes out and he drops. Well, before he took off the mask, he dropped Kevin Knight and hits his move, I think it's the message on Mike Bailey, and then he takes him out. But it's Andrade. So Andrade is back and he's officially in AEW. And then, just to spice things up a little bit, FTR appeared on stage with Stokely in a wheelchair to kind of stare down the Don Callis. I was blanking on stare down. I was going to call it eye down. I'm like, it's not eye downing. That's not a phrase. It's staring down the Don Callis family, which is an interesting thing because that's heel on heel violence. What do you think of Andrade being back? And of course, we can get into the specifics, or if you want to, and then what do you think of FTR staring down the Don Callis family?
I thought you were going to say I effing. I really thought you were going to go there.
Well, I didn't want to say I fucking, though. That would have worked.
Andrade, I'm glad that you got this finally cleared up. I don't know. I feel like Andrade and for made multiple debuts and re-debuts in AEW. We'll see. I'm kind of in a wait and see to see what they do with him this time around. And FTR coming out, I'm interested to see what combination they would face from the Don Callis family.
Yeah, that Davis and Doyle, but I don't want Doyle losing already.
No, would it be Andrade and someone then?
Well, Andrade was staring down Kenny last time he was around.
True. But things might have changed since then, so who knows? I am on board with Double D being the tag name.
Double D's, baby. I will say, clearly, Andrade, he had shown up on AEW TV. And everybody was kind of shocked because he wasn't in the 90-day non-compete. And everybody's like, how the hell is he here? And then he went away for a while, not by AEW's choice, but because WWE decided to step in and say, hey, no, there's clauses in this. You can't compete. And I think it took a while to work work his way through the honestly, it didn't go necessarily through the legal system, but work its way out. And now clearly he was in Japan, and now he's here. He's cleared. So they cleared those legal hurdles. So his double debut is odd, but it's not AEW's fault. They thought he was clear. He had said he was clear, and then as Jesse Ozark says, there were Santa Clauses in the contract that caught up with him. I am with you. I am curious who they. I don't think Andrade goes against FTR. I think he is Omega. So it will be interesting. Again, this is just another guy in the Callis family, and a star in the like another bigger name in the Callis family. This is getting to feel like NWO in like 1998, 1997, 1998, where it's like, do we have to have a wolf pack? Like, no, I still think you're going to get, I think Takeshita's going to leave it. I'm curious what happens with Fletcher. But that's only like two guys. Now it's two of their bigger names, but that's still only like two guys that may leave it. You'd have to have some major split offs, I think. Or my, say it right now, my problem with the Callis family is less that they have all these guys and more that they use all these guys. Meaning, if you're wrestling Kyle Fletcher and they won whatever, the entire group comes out to beat you down. If it was more just like, this group kind of handles this, these three are part of this, these three are part of this. They're all Callis, but they don't like, it wouldn't feel as annoying, but this is just, I don't know. Maybe I'm going on a tangent and I'm wrong.
No.
Yeah,
there's going to be a lot of casualties. You kind of fall by the wayside as far as, you know, people who have a role as one of the members, but not a big role. And then they're gonna be like wondering what to do with them. Like, you know, Lance Archer, Mark Davis, and those guys, unfortunately, whatever this Don Callis family disbands, they'll be kind of out in limbo again.
Yeah. All right. So after that cool segment, we go to Willow Nightingale's TBS Championship Celebration. Celebration. Willow comes out and she is with Harley Cameron, obviously their tag partners, and Chris Statlander, because she and Statlander recently made up after Willow beat Mercedes Moné in her match. They had a hug. Question before we even get into the segment, were you chanting for them to hug?
I was too wrapped up in the motion to chant.
I will accept that answer, because even if I want to chant, I don't chant. So I'm a silent watcher. I don't get into any chance, but I will accept that you were too in the emotion, as long as you weren't anti-hug.
No. That's what my city brings people together, you know?
Yeah. So Willow comes out and she is just delightful. Laron Ford with a very funny, I don't need to see another title celebration in the women's division anytime soon. I will admit they do it more than anyone else. So
yeah,
it doesn't. And then he comes up with a great comment. It feels like, why can't Chris get her own segment? It's like they forgot that she's the women's world champion. I want to address it. I want to address all these issues. Let me get through my comments, and then I do actually have comments on, because I think they're very interesting. So Willow comes out and she's delightful. She compliments Harley Cameron up and down. Then she compliments Chris Statlander up and down. Like, just this really great way of being praising her, the women out there with her. And then she does something that Elise appreciates. She goes, but this is a championship celebration on AEW. I know someone's going to come out to ruin this for me. I know people want to have a shot at this. I understand. So come on out. And she goes, I know there's actually one specific person who wants to come out here and ruin this, because that's what she did for Chris. And that's Mercedes Moné. Mercedes coming out. So Mercedes comes out in the most ridiculous of outfits. It's this white getup with like a cowboy hat, but it has a veil. So like she's mourning. It's just fucking absurd. And she walks out. She gets to the ring. And Willow kind of like does her thing, and you think that they're going to have this moment where I didn't know if she was going to attack Willow or if she was going to get on the mic and like have a moment of where she like kind of breaks down on the mic. No, she goes psycho. The hat comes off. She starts tearing up the table. She attacks Harley Cameron. She goes to attack Willow, but Willow like sidesteps her and she trips and face plants into the cake. Listen, if there's a cake on screen, somebody's face is going in it. Then Willow gets her into the power bomb and power bombs her more onto the cake. So Mercedes looked crazy and was humiliated, which for other wrestlers, you might be like, well, why would you do that? But for someone who's coming off of her high, it's a necessary thing, like, to show her descent, because this is the story they're clearly embracing. Now, going to Laron's comments, correct. It seems like only the women have the championship celebrations. I mean, I know MJF came out, but it seems like he just talked. Like, he didn't feel like he had like a full on, like, am I wrong? I don't remember MJF having a cake out there. He's had them, but it seems like every time a woman wins one, they have one. Not every time a man's does. And it's just like, it's a little weird. And not only that, they start to become the same segment over and over. Now, this time they at least spice it up because Willow called it out. And she's like, hey, someone's coming out here, so you might as well just do it before I get annoyed. And I agree. I like that they united Statlander and Willow again. I never understood why once they made Statlander face, they didn't just bring them back into friendship. I agree. It does feel like they forgot she's champ. That tends to be the mistake they have with a lot of their champions, that they kind of forget that they gave them a belt. I'm hoping she was only out there for this and she moves on quickly, just like a celebration. And then she has a feud, because she needs another feud and I don't know who it's going to be, but she needs someone. What did you think of all this and what are your comments?
I am also over with the celebrations. I am agreeing that Statlander as a world champion feels like an afterthought, at least from my peripheral view of it. And then even the celebration from Willow, I felt like Willow was an afterthought, where it really felt like more of a vehicle for the Mercedes storyline of her being unhinged and her downfall. I don't know what the direction is from Willow now as TBS champion. We didn't really set up anything new with her for challengers. So I guess they're going to be messing with the Sisters of Sin, right? I think. So
yeah. So I will say, we'll skip and go. There's a cool Mark Briscoe thing we'll cut to in a minute, but we'll do before that. Triangle of Madness cut a promo on Statlander. Basically, Tekla cuts a promo, and Scott pointed out Tekla does seem like the next challenger to Statlander. Where basically Tekla, and I gotta admit, Tekla does great in this promo, where she's like, and you gotta had to go crawling back to Willow, and it's only a matter of time before you betray her, because that's what you do. Because for a while, that's what Statlander was doing. But that those three women, the Babe's Wrath and Statlander, cannot beat the Triangle of Madness, which again, I kind of hope they can't, because there's establishment versus non-establishment. My thing about this is, well, one, this has two of my issues that I have, maybe even three, but we're going to. One, I hate that Will is a tag champ now. I loved her when she won, but I hate double champ like that. I don't mind double singles champ. I don't like double tag champ, tag champ and singles belt, because it automatically pulls away from the tag division that they just started. Like, the tag people should be tag people. They're specialists for those moments in time. When they're out of it, it's fine. But so I don't like that. And clearly now you're putting the tag champions in with your TBS. It gets very, very, very muddy. Like, who's going for what? Then Tekla, I think Tekla's great. I think she'd be a great challenger for Statlander. They have not built her up that way. She had moments, don't get me wrong. She's had some great moments, but then it just didn't happen. So they don't do their one weakness, and it's really prevalent in the women's division. It's the one thing they've struggled with. Occasionally, they get lucky, kind of like when Jamie Hayter first won it the first time, where a woman builds herself up on her own, and they're like, okay, fans just so desperately want her to win that that's the route it's going. But most of the time, it feels like they're throwing in challengers and then building them up instead of letting the build happen before, until fans are like, they have to be the next challenger. And that's how I feel with Tekla. Like, Tekla, they're going to work now to get her to be at that level. And they should have been working for the last few months to make her seem like the next challenger. Like, don't do it after, do it before. Make her undeniably the next challenger. That's just my humble opinion.
Yeah, I'm not taking her as a serious threat to beat Statlander. I almost felt like the non-title picture for the women, like Toni Storm, I feel like her storyline has more direction and more build than the women's championship does.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So I don't know. They gotta, then this comes back to my argument that they don't utilize the whole roster enough, not just with the trios and tags, but Tekla should have had other feuds in the meantime while she waited to get to Statlander. And she should have won those against other women that you're constantly using. And then those other women could go to other feuds and Tekla can be moved with Statlander and you're constantly doing a rotation. But they put them on the sidelines and then they pull them back. And I just, that is the most annoying thing they do. There was an awesome Mark Briscoe promo where he cut it outside of his chicken farm. Congratulates Willow, which I think is awesome, keeping the conglomeration together. Talks about being TNT champion, and I like that he acknowledged that he hasn't really been wrestling, but he was watching the Continental Classic, because it almost seemed like that's why he wasn't wrestling. Like, this thing took place where the TBS would be, and I'm fine with that. That's actually logic to be like, for these couple weeks, we're not really worried about your belt. I know that seems ridiculous, but this is a special time of year. I can accept that. Some might not, but at least for me, that makes sense. But then he gets into his typical promo of like, I got to get back. He's feeling the itch. He has to go wrestle. And he will be wrestling, I believe it's Hashishiro. Is that who he's? Yes. Wrestling Hashishiro. And yeah, he did that whole hand thing. And he's going to whoop his ass. So that's really cool. So how would you think of the promo? And also, is that a different belt? Did the belt just look different tonight?
He got that belt when the conglomeration came to him.
I guess I've never seen it in an interview like this.
Yeah,
where it was like, so clear to like the screen, because usually he's in the ring or he's backstage and there's so much color behind it. Mm-hmm. Whereas this just stood out to me. But what do you think of his promo?
I like the kind of promo from Marcus. It wasn't as outrageous like some of his conglomeration promos. I like his a little bit more subtle ones. I feel a little bit more heartfelt and less goofy and less of a caricature of himself. But and talking about the belt, it made me think, do we have too many custom belts with the TNT Championship and then the World Championship both being all patterned up?
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't the women have fancy belts?
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Like I said, it stuck out to me. I mean, it's a good promo, though. Mark Briscoe, when he's on his game, is on his game. But I kind of like that they tried to justify why he hasn't been around. Even if he was just taking time off, it was fun. So then we get to Sammy Guevara versus Bandido. Bandido, of course, next week is going to be challenging MJF for the title. So this was kind of like, it wasn't for that, but this is kind of Sammy's step. This was to establish Bandido's even more and for Sammy to have a chance to be like, I'm the guy. This match fucking ruled. They were all over the place doing stuff. There was DDT on the floor and stuff on the desk. I do know Guevara, I think, broke his nose or did something to his nose at one point. He did a shooting star press to the floor, which is fucking incredible. But Bandido did end up winning by pinfall with the 21-plex. I will also say the crowd was chanting, this is awesome, at some point. What did you think of the match?
It took me a while to get into it, but once I did, I really enjoyed it. It's been so long since Sammy's been on AEW television. He can still go, even though he doesn't really excite me much from a character standpoint, but his work, the work he does in the ring is really solid. I really enjoyed the back and forth they had with counting. They were kept counting like the one in the rack and they counter, and then the other one was trying to get up in the rack. Enjoyed that. Bandido was ridiculously strong. But I'm not a huge fan of his finisher. I feel like it's way too set up. It's just, I'm not a fan of, the guy's always going to be hunched over laying on a rope. It just takes too long for me to get going for me to believe it.
Yeah, we can get to that in a second because I agree with you. And I actually know, fuck it, we'll get to it right now. We're going to talk about MJF coming out, but when he hit it on MJF, MJF was there for forever. And it just looked so fucking stupid. But it reminds me in a bad way of Rey Mysterio 619, of like how you have to constantly get the guy into the most awkward of positions. It'd be one thing if like he had a more natural setup of getting him there, but he doesn't. It just kind of happens. But I mean, and with Sammy Guevara, my argument with Sammy, especially when they were trying to make him face, but at all times was just let the man fucking wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he gets over with the crowd is when he does some incredible shit in the ring. He's a better heel than face. He just is. He plays arrogant really well. I think he's killing it with LFI right now. I do think he's doing a great job with them. But he's just a better heel. But his strength has always been in the ring. He has a very fun looking style and he's very good at it. So the more they let him wrestle, the better off they are. Now we'll get to we talked about MJF coming out in the, just holding that rope, which felt like for 2 minutes for Bandido to hit his move. MJF comes out because he is facing Bandido next week. And he brings out John Cruz with him because he's got to translate, which we'll find out that Bandido does in fact speak English. What the fuck? But MJF basically runs him down. You don't deserve it. And I don't want to say necessarily runs him down, but kind of like he does that patronizing thing of like he praises Bandido, but also at the same time you could tell he's just saying like you're not at my level, and he wants Bandido to hand him the Dynamite diamond ring because Bandido won it, and now it's no longer MJF's, even though MJF, because MJF didn't defend it. I don't know, that's the whole weird thing is why MJF didn't go for it. And it's this back and forth and he's translating through Cruz, and finally Bandido's like, I speak English, what do you call him, son of a bitch, you stupid son of a bitch. I almost said motherfucker. I'm like, I know he didn't say that on TV. Then MJF does the most MJF thing that I saw coming. He like kind of like begs him off and then kicks him in the balls. And then down goes. I didn't want to say I predicted it ahead of time, but as it's developing, I saw every step before it happened. Kicked him in the balls. He dropped down. He takes the ring. Then Cruz picks up Bandido. I'm like, well, now Cruz is going to get punched in the face with the ring. Sure enough, Bandido ducks and Cruz goes down. And MJF's like, oh no. Bandido then kicks MJF in the nuts. And now you have both of them with Cruz and MJF like hanging on to the ropes in the position for Bandido when he hits his move. It did take too fucking long. Like MJF just, I'm like, even if you're out of it, you know who you're fighting, you would just, even if you went to the top rope, you totally screw up his move. Like, well, but what do you think of the MJF interference? Or not interference, but the MJF after the match.
Let's say it was really predictable as far as what was going to happen. And I think, first of all, I'm glad John Cruz got some TV time.
He deserved it, yes.
I like the fact that they let Mandio have kind of the upper hand here and let him get one over on MJF, because I think it's probably safe to say he's not going to beat MJF. So it was nice for him to one up him. I actually thought that MJF was going to challenge or yell at Bandido to put up the diamond ring versus the title. But maybe that'll come out of it.
Put it up. Yeah. I expected the same thing. I'm glad they didn't. I don't like, because it would have just set the whole thing that they just did to make no sense for him to get it. You can do it later down the road, but it shouldn't happen so quickly. Like, and I kind of like that it sticks in MJF's craw that he can't win. He doesn't have the ring anymore. When that's clearly, he just expected to have it forever. Like that was, he thought it was his thing. We do get we don't talk much about it, but we would get a very cool Brody King hype reel, which I was a little shocked at, but I'm not complaining. I think it means they're going to push him a little bit more, as they should. He's fucking awesome.
So are we, then we are get we Are we splitting up from Vito then more? Or are you like, are they both?
Well, they kind of already split up because Bandito's got his, he's going after the singles title. Like they're friends, but they're not a tag, like, you know, more like conglomeration style at this point where they're friends, but they're not together.
Brody should win the TNT championship sometime this year.
Agreed. We then go on to Marina Shafir versus Toni Storm. This was a fairly typical Marina Shafir match, you know, trying to go for some submissions. She likes her kicks. She likes her stops. I think her style is really coming to her. She's really coming to her own with her wrestling. I do like Toni Storm yelling at Garcia and Wheeler Yuta. I just don't know why. That's just very funny to me. She almost got head scissored at one point, but Shafir missed it. There was Shafir like mocking Toni and all that, but then Toni gets the advantage and looks like she's going to win. And then Wheeler Yuta pulls Paul Turner out of the ring. He was the ref, and Toni Storm wins by disqualification. After the match, Marina attacks Toni some more, but as expected, Mina Shirakawa runs down, but she just gets kicked right away. Like not even a second. Then Luther comes out and he has to do this ridiculous thing where like he can't get to his feet. He like crawls in on his knees and then he's looking up at Marina, and then Daniel Garcia and Wheeler Yuta are like, it's almost like they're licking their chops thinking, oh, we have this advantage. But then you hear the crowd go wild. Roger Strong comes running in and you hear Orange Cassidy's music. Of course, Orange Cassidy's not running in. He's Orange Cassidy walking. Claudio comes out. I thought this was really cool. So I'm bringing out. So Wheeler and Daniel Garcia start to retreat to the back. You see Claudio come out. I just think it made Claudio look like a badass, is to be like, I'll come settle things. But they start to walk away. And then, just because it's a moment I liked, you have Orange lift up Toni and swing him into his arms. And then he lifts up Mina and swings her in his arm. And he had them both. So I don't know. I enjoyed this. What'd you think?
It was fun for, you know, for a match ending in DQ. I think it was a fun way to end it. And it does set it up for a nice little mixed trios match with, I think, I don't know. I'm guessing you can find another woman for the Death Riders to team with, but it'll probably be like Orange and Roderick and Toni versus Garcia and Yuta and Shafir. But yeah, it was fun. Like I said earlier, I think this storyline is more interesting than what they're doing with either of the women's champions right now.
Agreed. And I saw a comment someone asked in the Big GS, when is Buddy Murphy supposed to come back because of Buddy Matthews supposed to come back because of Brody King? I think he's out for a while, clearly. I think if they wanted him, like if he could, he'd be back. I don't think they would sit him on the sidelines. Yeah, I think it was fun. I think it was a lot of fun. I mean, you're right. Who would they get to team up with Marina? They have, you can always call Megan Bain up again if they want to go back that route. It'd be kind of fun if they found someone who mixed more with her style and could be part of the, like Megan Bain kind of has that, but not quite to the extent. So I don't know. Listen, I'm enjoying the Death Riders versus conglomeration feud. There's enough variety there that I've enjoyed it. Which, he's not part of the conglomeration, but we do have another Death Riders thing. Rene Peckat is interviewing Pac, and she asks about Darby Allin. He goes, hey, I'm 2-0. I don't have anything to prove. We know who wins. And Darby comes up, and he is pissed. And he's, give me the match. Pac won't do it, so Darby hits him with a fire extinguisher and then his skateboard, and then he beats him up, and then he threatens to slam his ankle into a door, which would break it. Now my problem there is, and then of course Pac agrees to the match, and then the Death Riders come and Darby's gone. My problem there is it took so long for Pac to agree that Pac could have just pulled his leg back at that point. It's like didn't have to stay in the door. Am I wrong?
That's fair. My issue was more that Darby as the face was far more heelish in this whole thing. He did everything a heel does usually when they want to force the hand of someone.
Say it again.
I felt like Darby was doing all these heel tactics from being a face. It's usually the heel who threatens violence against someone or tries to, who jumps attacks them and whines about wanting to get revenge. I don't know. I just felt like Darby came across as, it was hard for me to justify backing Darby in this one.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Cause Pac's not wrong. Pac is 2-0. Pac doesn't have to go, Darby's got nothing to prove he can win.
Yeah, and then he shot in the face with a fire extinguisher and then threatened to break his ankle or else. I mean, that's a
Yeah,
terrorist.
now granted, Darby's always been on the He's always walked that line of like, I'm willing to do things that some faces aren't type deal. So it kind of fits him. I don't know. I will say Scott George pointed out that I guess on Buddy Matthews, Sean Ross Sapp was asked today about Buddy Matthews and said he needs another surgery. So that sucks.
Wow.
So but this was, we'll see if we get Darby versus Pac and not have it be full of shenanigans. It's going to
Shenanigans?
be full of shenanigans. What'd you say? Yeah,
Is it shenanigans?
it's going to be full of shenanigans, their match. It's Darby versus Pac. And then we have our main event of the evening, Hangman Adam Page and Shane Swerve Strickland versus the Ops, Hook and Powerhouse Will Hobbs. It was an unsanctioned lights out match. And the unsanctioned part's okay, but the lights out becomes very important because they turn off the goddamn lights and then they stay off for like the first 10 minutes of this match, felt like, where they were using like spotlights to follow around. And it clearly was not on purpose. Like, because they eventually did get the lights back on. So whoever was in control of the lighting of this arena just was not good at it. I don't know,
No, they had issues during the Willow promo, like there, and then, but I like the fact that they had the spotlight. That's to me, that's how the lights out match should be. It shouldn't be like we're gonna flick the lights off and on, and then once they come back on, I'm like, no, they should be down, and use spotlights, and it'll make it feel like a different environment.
Yeah, I would lower that's one of those things where if you have the house lights up a little higher for the rest of the show, then you can keep them off for that and give that feel. But it was too much. Like it was hard to see too much. It, not probably for us, but I'm talking for the people there. It might have been hard to see at points. That was a little tough. This was what you expect it to be, featuring Hangman and Swerve, fucking violence personified. Hangman at one point, has a staple gun and he's just stapling everything he can on Hook. Jesus Christ. I know at one point he stapled Hobbs in the ding dong, how I'm gonna call it. There is one at time where then they brought in cinder blocks, and that I wasn't loving that because I don't know. I'm assuming they're real cinder blocks. I don't know if they're not. I would hope they're actually, I would hope they're fake, but I would assume they're real. And the reason I didn't love it is because where they were on the mat, anytime they took a bump around them, I got very nervous that if they didn't get the spacing out right, someone's head or neck could land on those cinder blocks. And it was just, and I know they're professionals, but it made me super fucking nervous every time they had them. Prince Nana at one point saved Swerve from being hit with, I believe, a chair. His head was on the cinder blocks and Hobbs is going to hit him with a chair, and then he grabs it, and then that results with Nana getting smashed in the corner by Hobbs. It looks like you're going to see, you get a world's strongest slam on the blocks. Like I said, I don't mind the blocks being used. I just don't like where they were positioned. But anyway, Hobbs and it looks like Hobbs and no, I'm sorry, it looks like Hangman and Swerve are going to win. Out comes the Ops Dojo, which is just local indie wrestlers. One guy looked at the camera and did a lot of tongue movement. I thought that was weird. He's like, I'm like, okay, dude, relax. They beat up Swerve and Hangman, pull them in the ring. They wrap a chain around the throat of the two of them. It looks like, oh no, this is the end. And then you see Nana climb back up. And everybody's like, why is he climbing back up? He's no good. He throws hot, quote unquote, hot coffee into Hop's face. which if that was real, dear God, I know it's not, but if it was, oh, that would hurt. That kind of takes Hobbs out of the picture, which allows Swerve and Hangman to beat up the Ops Dojo. They get out of the chain, then they use the chain for violence. They Deadeye Hobbs onto the cinder blocks with Swerve coming off the top to really emphasize it. Then they beat up on Hook and then have him choke out, tap out because he's choked out over the rope with the chain around his neck. Fucking hell, this was violent. What do you think?
It was everything you respect from Swerve and Heyman. I think this is kind of their, for lack of better words, this is their staple match of what they can do now. The cinder block was interesting. It felt like they had issues placing it when they wanted to. So maybe they didn't quite use it as much as they were going to and kind of pivoted away from it. I was waiting for someone for them to break. But otherwise it was fun. I don't know where they go from here now. I mean, now that they beat two out of the three ops or two out of the four members of the ops and then wrestle Samoa Joe and Shibata. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what necessarily where the story goes. It's got to finish with Joe, but I'm not sure how. I don't want to judge it because it's still early, but not early, but they still have more to play out. But it's clearly they got more to do. I guess I'll just leave it at that. We got to figure out where they're going because right now it's like this would almost feel like the blow off.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe is still right there. And Shibata, yeah, but Shibata kind of always with the ops is he floats in and out. He's not as like present, but Joe's still right there. So, you just got to figure out what he's going to do with Joe, I guess. Yeah. So that is AEW Dynamite for tonight. What did you think of the overall show?
It was, let me see, I'm going to use a fun scale. I will say a 3.25 fun.
Which rounds down to 3, so this is where it is on the fun scale. I'm going to say it was a 4 out of 4 for me. Oh, wow. I really enjoyed the matches we got. I thought the matches were top notch, especially the first two were so good. I don't think they were the first two, but the first three. It was all three, like the Moxley versus Shelton, the trios, and then Bandido versus Guevara. I thought all those were great, so I had a really good time. Obviously, I'm a little bit easier on my scale than other people. I tend to love things. But yeah, so that was Dynamite. We did our news and notes first, so we're going to wrap up. We appreciate everyone coming out. Scott George, Big G, Jesse, Lauren, Taylor Cannon, SJ, if I missed pieces, really appreciate it. I know we've been off for a couple of weeks. We are going to be now more consistent, hopefully. I had said that we hear rumors. It's on Mark Order Select that the rumors are out there that Kate may be returning soon, so hopefully that comes true. If she can't, I'll just yell at her. But Joe, until Kate returns and until we come back next week, where can you be found?
Oh, well, you can find me on social media at @_AsianJoe. Otherwise, I'm just going to be at home still unpacking. What about you, Ron?
That's all you're up to?
Basically, right now. I have a serial review blog, but that's been kind of put on the back burner right now. But for you can go to my social media profile and find a link to that.
Fair enough. I am, if I'm not here, well, I'm running all our socials, so at Mark Order Pod. I don't really do much on Instagram, but that's because it's picture-based and I don't have a lot of pictures for us. But so at Mark Order Pod. And then I have a history blog and podcast, at Here for History, at Here for History on YouTube. HereForHistory.com and at _HereForHistory on Twitter or at HereForHistory, whatever social you're on. I should have a new episode out this week, assuming my editing doesn't get destroyed by anything. But so that's it. With that, we thank everyone again. We will see you next week. And I am going to put up the outro overlay. Then I'm going to go down and I'm going to hit the outro music. And here we go.
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast.